This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We are here once again, Baruch Hashem, in the late hours of Erev Shabbos as we approach an amazing Shabbos, a Shabbos of double Pasha, Pasha's Chukas and Balak. A warm, warm thank you to all those who have taken the time, whether you're in your kitchen, whether you're driving home, wherever you might be listening on whatever kind of a device. We are so grateful that you've actually taken the opportunity and made the time to join us. And Bez Hashem, we can maybe learn something together. Get a chizuk together, Baruch Hashem, and have something nice to say at the Shabbos table, Baruch Hashem, and ourselves grow in our Yiddishkeit, grow in our understanding of Torah. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. As always, our show is brought to you as a refuah shleima for many, many cholim. We'll mention just a few: Yishai ben Devoraleya, Omri ben Einat, Yehuda Hillel ben Shalamis Leia, Saria Aaron ben Matya Halevi, Yehudis Brocha Bas Rochel, Esther Bas Tzipora, Devoira Yocha Bas Mira, Chana Fagel Bas Tzira Rezel, Besoich Shar Chayle Yisrael, amongst all those who, wherever they might be, here locally in Johannesburg, anywhere in the world, any Yids who needs a refuah shleima, who needs a little bit of extra rachmanus, of care, of tremendous chesed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the zechus of all of us coming together right so close to Shabbos and learning some Torah together. That can only be a tremendous, tremendous chus for all of these people. There's so much to speak about. I mean, one parsha is huge enough. Two parshas, there's endless. But let's take one pasuk. We have in the second parsha, the parsha of Bilam and Balak and the brachas, the blessings that Bilam says, is forced to say, because Baruch Hu puts in his mouth only brachas. And one of the first things he says is, Tamois nafshi mois yesharim. May my soul die the death of the upright, usi acharisi kamayu, and my end be like his. Now, this sounds so hypocritical. How hypocritical can you be? Bilam, who represents the sort of the nadir of depravity, sought to die the death of the upright. He wanted to be like the Avos HaKadoshim, my holy Avos, while living a life sort of completely counterintuitive to everything they represented. On the other hand, Bilam, of course, was no ordinary kind of pagan. He was the greatest prophet, a man who kind of sort of peered in their loftiest spiritual realms, who could articulate, right, blessings of extraordinary depth. Yet, he lived a life driven by the most base desire, his ego, and his own moral sort of turpitude. He wanted to die like a tzaddik, but he refused to live as one. A tzaddik is not defined by the way he dies, regardless of the sort of the sort of clear kedusha of that moment. He is defined by the way he lives. A tzaddik faces every single day, daily. He has spiritual challenges. He has opportunities during which he sort of makes the correct choices that reflect his discipline, that reflect his restraint, and his moral courage. Bilam was well aware of what it takes to achieve the status of a tzaddik, but he sought to sort of bypass the process because it was much too demanding. Instead, he kind of opted, right, for the result, right? One cannot harvest what he doesn't plant, and one cannot establish a legacy unless he lives it. What Bilam asked for was not only hypocritical, it was actually impossible. Right? Bilam represents one who wants to live the sort of the unrestrained life in which religious boundaries, right, which have been the staple of our nation for centuries, right, are viewed as kind of archaic, yet he sort of conceals the spirituality and morality, right, and his terrible behavior, but he wants to be buried like a tzaddik. Of course, the difference between a yid and a goy is by a Jew, even if he is acting not the way he should, but he still has that pintle yid, he still has that little spark of his neshama, which of course could at any moment ignite. Why, Bilam, that would never, ever happen. We're going to talk more about interesting issues now, Pasha. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late afternoon air of Shabbos. My name is Rav Moshe Schnurb. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show. Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, a warm welcome to those who are joining us now. As I said, there's actually so much to discuss in this week's parsha. And of course, we have a bit of a legacy, we have a bit of a history, we have an archive full of shows on this week's parsha. So what can we say that we actually haven't spoken about before? So I want to profile a little bit. You know, in this week's parsha, we have a little bit about the death of the great Tzadekes Miriam, older brother of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the truth is, we actually know very, very little about her. And even more importantly, about the legacy that she left behind. The pasuk in our parsha says one pasuk about her. It says, "Vayovayu b'nei Yisrael kol ha'eda midbar tzin." The entire nation, this is ready at the end of the 40 years, the entire previous generation of those who went out of Mitzrayim had already passed away. And now this was the new generation. So we're talking about the last year of the Jews being in the desert, on the sort of threshold of them going to the land of Israel. So they all came midbar tzin. They came to the desert of tzin. B'chodesh harishon. This was again in the first month, in the month of Nisan. V'yeshev ha'om b'kodesh. And the people settled in a place called Kodesh. Vatamas shom Miriam, and Miriam died there, vatikover shom, and she was buried there. End of that verse. The very, very next pasuk carries on and continues, v'lo haya mayim la'ida. Now, there was no water, something perhaps we in Johannesburg can experience, not having water. It's a serious, serious thing not to have water. And therefore, Vayikalu al Moshe val Aaron. The Jewish nation ganged up and gathered around Moshe and Aaron to complain and to press their point that we need water. Rashi brings, what does it mean? Why suddenly did they not have water? They didn't have problems with the city councils and things like we have. Mikan says, Rashi, we see from here, Shekol Mem Shana, that the entire 40 years that they had spent in the desert, Hayolahem Haba'er, they had this traveling well that came with them. And that came b'schus Miriam. That came solely in the merit of Miriam. And therefore, when Miriam passed away, when Miriam was nifter, so that which came in her merit, in her schut, also went away. And that's why suddenly there was no water. And in fact, in the Sefer, Birchas Toiv, which is written by Rav Moshe Nara Lakoyin, he brings an allusion, a beautiful sort of remez, a hint to this, because to prove to us that in fact the well came in the merit of Miriam, because in the pasuk we say in Hallel, we would say ha'oifchi ha'tzur agam moyim, turns over the rock and it makes it creates a pond of water. So if you take those four words, so ha'oifchi is the last letter is a yud, and the atzur the last letter is a resh, agam the last letter is a mem, and mayim the last letter is a mem. So if you scramble them a little bit, you end up with the word Miriam. So the tzur, the water that they had, came in the merit of Miriam. And we find in the literature several reasons why the Jews merited to a traveling brook with them in the desert, specifically in the merit of Miriam, the prophetess. So in the Sifsei Chachamim, he writes, says, Yas, question, if you're going to ask, how come the traveling well didn't come in the merit of Aaron or in the merit of Moshe? Why was it specifically in the merit of Miriam? So we can perhaps answer, because in the merit that she waited for Moshe Rabbeinu, we're talking much, much earlier after Moshe Rabbeinu was born, where he was, because the Egyptians were looking for him, they put him in a little box, and they put him in the reeds at the side of the Nile River. And Miriam, little six-year-old Miriam, stood there and waited by the water to see what was going to happen to Moshe Rabbeinu when he was thrown in that little box. In the merit of her standing by the water, watching, waiting patiently to see what was going to happen, therefore, that created for her this tremendous merit of the well of water. In other words, that she stood by the water, and therefore the water came in her merit. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave water to the Jewish nation on her account. That's the explanation of the Sifsei Chachamim. The Medrash Tanchuma brings an additional a reason, and he says, why is it that the well isn't in the merit of Miriam? Because she said a shira, in addition to the lengthy shira that is written in the Torah, that was said by Moshe ubnei Yisrael, by Moshe and the men of the Jewish nation. Subsequently, it says, "Vatikach Miriam and Avuya Miriam took the instruments and led all the women also in her own shira alayom, in her own song by the sea." So therefore, she merited, because she sang a song by the sea, she merited to be the one that brought this source of water for the Jewish nation, because she said this shira. The difficulty is, and what we need a little bit of an explanation is, that, as I just mentioned, Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish men also sang a song by the sea. It wasn't only Miriam the prophetess who sang by the sea. So why did the well come specifically in her merit that she sang, and not in the zchus of all the other people who sang? So perhaps we can say that we actually find, regarding Miriam the prophetess, says there, Vatikach Miriam Anaviyah Achos Aaron. Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took Esatif Biyoda. She took the tambourine, the drums. Vatetzena Kola Noshim Acharea Besupim Umimcholos. And she led all the women afterwards in with drums and with dancing. So what seems apparent from the pasuk is that Miriam the prophetess, it just wasn't enough that she just used her mouth, she just sang a song, but she actually made a whole instrumentation, a whole sort of concert out of it. She took the drums and the dancing in order that it should even increase to a higher degree the simcha, the joy, the celebration amongst the Jewish nation. And perhaps on that additional joy, on that additional happiness that she added in, so she merited to be the one that would bring the water to the Jewish nation. Interesting, the in the Sefer, Asif Sekoyen, which is from those, one of the relatives or confidants of the Arizal, so he brings in our Pasha an additional reason why Miriam was the one who merited to have the well brought for him. He says, because that she used to organize the tefillah, the ritual immersion of all the Jewish women who had been in a state of need of ritual impurity or had children, and when they purified themselves, so in order to make them attractive to the husband, so that their husbands who were going through such an incredibly difficult time would be turned on to them, so she helped the women sort of doll themselves up. And of course, that led to the incredible population growth in the Jewish nation. That tremendous act of kindness on behalf of the Jewish people was what merited for her this incredible privilege of being the one that in whose merit the water came. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late afternoon air of Shabbos. My name is Rav Moshe Schnurb. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We are talking about the merit of the great tzaddikess, the great prophetess, Miriam, that she was the one that brought the well of water to the Jewish nation. And we're saying that this miracle of the water was so great that we read in our Parsha that the Jewish nation stood there and they sang a shira, they sang a song, special song about this miracle of the well. And they sang, Oz Yoshi Yisrael Es Ashira Azois. Then they sang this song, Ali Be'erenulo. They answered and they said a shira about this well of Miriam. And the difficulty is, because, I mean, if we just said that this well accompanied the Jewish nation for the entire 40 years that they were in the desert, so why only now did suddenly the Jews wake up and remember, oh yeah, now we have to sing to Hashem about it? And in fact, the Medrash says that the song was not necessarily for the miracle of the well, but it was for a different miracle that we know that, as Rashi explains, the Jews had to go through a very, very narrow ravine overhung by two mountains, and their enemies had planned an ambush. They were hiding in the caves above them, and when the Jews came, they were going to ambush them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a tremendous kindness and brought the two mountains together, crushing all the enemies. And when they saw the blood sort of going down into the water, then they realized this great miracle. And the Bnei Yisrael then knew about the miracle that happened. And then they sang Shira. But in fact, the Tanhuma brings that when the Jewish nation needed to cross this place called Nachal Arnon, and their Moirim, these evil people, were hiding in these caves and on the two sides of the mountain, and they intended to kill the entire Jewish nation. So Hashem did this miracle, and the two mountains on the both sides kind of came together, and the protruding rocks of one sort of fit into the caves of the other and completely crushed and killed all the Amorim that were in those caves. And the Jews sort of passed underneath and they didn't know anything. And therefore Hashem said that the Be'er of Miriam, this well of Miriam, should go through the caves and produce the skulls and the bones of these people. And when the Jews came to drink from the waters of the well of Miriam, they saw all the limbs of the Miriam, right? And then they understood the miracle that had been done for them. And then they sang Shira Alab Erbadi by the well. But according to the first Medrash we quoted, that Miriam merited to bring the well because of her song. So then we could perhaps say something additional. Why did they sing Shira? Why did they sing a song now, only after the water actually stopped? Because the Jewish nation also wanted to then sort of continue, that the well should continue. And therefore they said to themselves, in the same way as Miriam, the prophetess, merited to bring the water of this well through her song, as we said, that she sang by the crossing of the Reed Sea, so we too will say a Shira, and hopefully then we'll merit that the well will come back. Or perhaps we could say even more, that there's a analogy, a mashal, brought by Rav Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, the Ben Ishchai, that he brings in his Sefer Nifloim Ma'asecha. He brings a story about a couple, a very, very wealthy couple that didn't have any children, and therefore they adopted a young boy, and they raised him, and they fed him, and they gave him to drink, and they supplied everything he needs. Right? And this they did for many, many years. One day, another very poor boy arrived at the house and asked this wealthy couple if they could give him some charity. And they gave him some coins, and he thanked them profusely over and over and time again. And the wife turned to her husband and says, "I don't understand. This little boy we adopted, and we've given him so much. We've looked after him for years. He doesn't praise us like this little urchin who just gave something to, and he can't stop thanking us. I don't understand." So the husband said to her, says, "Wait a little bit." And he showed her. What did he do? So the wealthy man called this orphan that they had adopted, and he said to him, said, "Until today, we invested so much for you. But from now, you try to manage by yourself. Please, I want you to leave our house now. Now you're a big boy, you can manage by yourself." So the orphan, with tears in his eyes, packed up his things, and he left the house. And literally, he slept in the street, and he was looking for food in the rubbish bins. After a week, that couple, a rich couple, brought him back to the house. And then suddenly, that orphan child began to really profusely praise them and thank them again and again. Sell the wealthy man to his wife. "You see, now he begins to thank us properly. Why? Because he got so used to that we gave him everything that he needed, and it became, as far as he was concerned, it became sort of, you know, self-understood. That was life. That's what he got. But now that we stopped giving him everything, and for 1 week he had to understand what the real life was all about, that it doesn't happen sort of automatically, that a lot of effort goes into it. So now he can thank us and praise us." Says, so too, the Jewish nation. They 40 years they were spent in the desert, and they got used to the fact that they have always this well of water going with them. But when Miriam passed away, Miriam the great prophetess passed away, and the well stopped, so they suddenly understood, hey, this is not something that's just to be taken for granted. And now they began to praise and to thank and to sing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to sing Shira too. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Avos in the fifth chapter where it says that this well of Miriam was created on Erev Shabbos, Ben Hashmashos, just on the transition from Friday into Shabbos, will be called Ben Hashmashos, right? On that very first one, Adam Rishon was created on Friday. This was that very first transition from Friday into Shabbos. That's when this well was created. In fact, the Mishnah says, Asara Devarim, there were 10 things, Nivru Be'erev Shabbos Ben Hashmashos, that were created on this Erev Shabbos, in this transition time from weekday to Shabbos. And he lists them. Piaretz, the mouth of the earth, which we learned about last week, that swallowed up Korach and his followers. Upia Be'er, this well of Miriam. Upia Asan, and the mouth of the she-donkey that we read about in this week's second Pasha with Bilam. The Akeshes and the rainbow, the Hamon and the special food we had in the desert of the Mon, the Hamata and the special staff of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Shamir and this worm that they used for building the Mishkan, for cutting the stones, the Ksava, Mirta, the Luchas, and the handwriting and the Luchot, the two tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu received. And Rabbi Avada Mimartanura explains, says, what is the meaning of this mouth of the well? Says, this is referring to the well of Miriam that traveled with the Jewish nation in the desert, right, on all of their journeys. And some say that Sheposcha Pia, that the well opened its mouth and the well sang Shira. As it says, Ali Be'er Enula. And in other words, it's true that this well was created at the time of the creation of the world. But many, many thousands of years have passed that, you know, it remained dormant. It didn't do anything until the time where the Jews left Egypt. And then it traveled in the desert for 40 years with them. And now they didn't have any water, right? It stopped now and they had no water. But the Ramban in Perichov teaches us something different. And he says, no. The well of Miriam was always a miraculous well, and it was the source of what he calls Mayim Chaim Noveah, flowing, a good water wherever that the Jews went, wherever they wanted it, so they had it, right? Even earlier, when Abraham chased Ishmael out of the house, and he was dying of thirst, the bear of Miriam was there to provide him with sustenance. And it when in Chorev, when the Jews cried for water, that was the rock that Moshe Rabbeinu hit, and the bear of Miriam was there. And all the journeys, it emanated from this rock wherever the Jews camped. And when the tzaddikus died, so that well stopped. And now, but then subsequently, it came back because of the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu again, as in this week's Pasha, again hit the rock, and that same rock continued to provide water for the Jewish nation. So we see that this it's not true that this well actually was active even before the Jews left Mitzrayim. And the source for the words of the Rabban that this well was already active and already involved from the time of Yishmael. So it's actually in the Medrash, in the Yalkut Shemayni, in Parshas Vayera, where he says that Yishmael was 17 years old when he was chased away from his father Avram's house. And in the schus of his father Avram Avinu, so the water never, there was always water for this child. And when he got to the desert, so he started, unfortunately, going back to his old roots and started following practices of idol worship, right? And the mother, you know, who was trained in that, the mother who came from Egypt, she knew very much about idolatry, and she began to go back to her old ways. And straight away, they had no water, and Yishmael was about to die, and she threw him down under one of the brambles in the desert, and she davened, and she said, and Yishmael davened, sorry, and he said, Elokei Avram Avi, the God of my father Avram, right? So here we have someone's going to, I'm going to die, and please take my life, and don't let me die of thirst. And Hashem listened to his prayers. It says, Kishamalakim, Hashem heard the voice of the child. And Hashem opened this well that was created already ben Ashmoshes. And they went and they drank from it and they refilled their pitchers. And from there, they carried on and they traveled throughout the whole desert until they get to Midbar Paran. And there they found other water sources and they settled there. That's what the Medrash says. So the truth is that this well not only functioned and helped Yishmael, but the shepherds of Avram Avinu also benefited from this well of Miriam. It's again a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. That the major is trying to explain the discussion that took place between the shepherds Avram and the shepherds of Avimelech, the king of the Philistines, and he said the rabbi said that the shepherds of Avram were fighting with the shepherds of Avimelech. The shepherds of Avram said, "This well belongs to us," and the other one said, "No, the well belongs to us." And the shepherds of Avram said, "I'll tell you what, we'll do a test. Whoever the water rises up to water their sheep, that really proves that the well is his." And when the water saw the sheep of Avram Avinu, straight away it rose up. And Hashem said to him, right, "This should be a sign for your children, just like you, as soon as the water saw all of your sheep, it rose up, so too for your children, since as soon as this well is going to see them, straight away it's going to rise up to meet them." And he says, "Oz Yoshi," that's why they sang this song. Interesting, in the drushes on the Torah of Rabbi Yeshua ibn Shuiv, who was one of the students of the Rashba, he adds actually a little bit more to this discussion, and he says that the servants of Avimelech stole from Avram Avinu this well, and therefore Avram, that's why it says, the pasuk says that Avram rebuked Avimelech for that act of theft. He says, "V'ichiach Avram es Avimelech." Avram rebuked Avimelech al odos be'er ha'mayim asher gozlu, for the well that they had stolen. And then Avimelech answered, "No, Allah yadati, I don't know who did this." And he says, "You say that that my servants stole it? Who says? But maybe, the land belongs to me, so all the water belongs to me also. So Avram answered, no, let the well prove it. And again, and that whoever the water goes up for, that proves that the well is his. So Avimelech said to him, what? I use sort of your all the holy names, and through the name of Hashem, the water is going to come to meet you? Said to Avram, no. Take the animals of my animals and your animals. I won't even go with you. Right? It says, Ki Yesheva Kavosas, you take these seven animals. And Bavur Tielila Eda, to be the testimony that I dug this well. And Avimelech took Avram's animals and his own animals, and he did his own independent test and saw that the water only came up for the sheep of Avram Avinu, and not for his own sheep. And therefore Avram gave him these seven sheep as an indication to Avimelech that, in spite of the fact that he actually, although it was in his property, still that in another seven generations it was going to become the property of Moshe Rabbeinu. So it comes out that the first person that benefited from this well of Miriam was actually Avram Avinu. And perhaps we can say that the Gemara in Bav Metzia explains that this Be'er was in the schus of Avram Avinu, that he gave water to these three Malachim. The Gemara says, "Damrav Chama Bachanina." Right? He says, "Bischar Shloisha Zochul Shloisha," because of three things Avram did, they merited three things as a reward of the butter and the milk. They merited the man as a reward for the fact that he stood over them and waited on them. So they merited to the clouds above them, and to the reward of Yukak Nomad Mayim, take the water, they merited the Be'er of Miriam. And therefore, already by Avram Avinu, he was ready to create for himself and utilize for himself this Be'er of Miriam, and to benefit from it, both him and his children afterwards. Fascinating, fascinating history. This is 101.9. The program is late afternoon, Friday, Shabbos. My name is Rav Moshe Schnurb. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. A warm welcome to those who are just joining us now. Moments from the beginning of Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Kukas, Balak, Tov, Shin, Pei, Evav, the final Shabbos before the beginning of the three-week period. Please God, this coming Thursday will be the 17th of Tammuz, the fast of the 17th of Tammuz, which commences the period of the three-week mourning. And a warm welcome to all those who just joined us. And as we always do, at this time on the show, to just go through the important times and details you will need for this coming Shabbos Habo Aleinu L'Toyva, Be'etz Hashem, very, very soon. So today, the earliest time for lighting your Shabbos candles is just a short while away, 20 past 4. 20 past 4 is the earliest time to begin your Shabbos, and what a schus, what a tremendous, tremendous merit it would be if we can really push and really make an effort to make Shabbos start even earlier than we have to. Yes, Fridays are crazy, Fridays are busy, there's so much going on, so much to do, but with a little bit of planning, with a little bit of forethought, with a little bit of organization, we can actually change the whole gambit of our Fridays. Maybe we could do a little bit more before. Maybe you can do a little bit each night instead of leaving everything for Friday afternoon. Maybe we can get the family to help. Maybe we can get the kids to do one more job than they already do. Of course, hopefully they're doing something, but get them something else to do. Get everyone involved. Get the whole family involved. Get things sort of energized. Get people excited about the coming of Shabbos. And you'll suddenly see that you turn around, everything's done. And we can actually accept Shabbos earlier than we always do. And 4:20 is a great time to start the Shabbos. And then sort of sink into a sofa, take a book, take a child, talk to him. Take a, you know, do something, learn the Parsha somehow. Let Shabbos come into our lives. Let Shabbos envelop us and surround us and kind of caress us earlier than it needs to be. What a wonderful, wonderful thing that will be. Let's try. Let's try this week, right? And try next week also, please God. 4:20 is not so difficult. We can get all the food ready. We can get ourselves ready. We can get the house in order. There's no reason why we can't do it if that's our will, if that's something that's important to us. If you can't make it at 4:20, so then 4:30, 1:45 is also great. In fact, the latest time for benching licht this afternoon is at 5:08. 5:08 is the deadline for lighting our Shabbos candles. And that is the moment where, for all practical purposes, Shabbos begins in our lives, whether we like it or not. By that time, everything has to be done. The food has to be on the hot tray or on the plot or wherever it is. And we have to have showered and we have to be dressed and we have to sort of put the keys away for the car. It's not negotiable. Yes, there are the 18 minutes between that and sunset. But those, as we always say, that is emergency time for situations where a person, God forbid, if he didn't have that 18 minutes, might actually come to break Shabbos. Then we give him a little bit of leeway. But as far as we are concerned, 5:08 is it. It's the end of the game. And the beginning of the new life, the beginning of a Shabbos Kodesh. So, Shkia then is at 5:26. That's already sunset. That's the absolute latest time, even for the emergency people, which means that at that time, for sure, we are in full Shabbos mode. If you want to make sure that it is when you daven Ma'ariv, you're davening at night, 5:44 is already full night. And you can say the Kriyat Shema, fulfill the Torah obligation of saying the Kriyat Shema at night. And then, of course, we have an amazing, amazing long night in front of us. Time to sit with the family, have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos meal, beautiful hot food, nice atmosphere, a bit of singing, a bit of Divrei Torah, some chat. Talk about the week. Talk about what you learned. Talk about what you saw. Talk about what impressed you. Talk about what you want to achieve in the coming week. There's so much to do. And then when the meal is over, come on. It's too early to go to bed at 8. So sit for a while. Sit with the children. Learn something or learn yourself. Be inspired. Somehow, go through the Parsha. It's a long Parsha this week. Double Parsha. Lots to do. We certainly can use our time well and make the Shabbos night into something really, really special, really something sanctified, and really something that's going to be meaningful on a long-term basis. For all of us. Tomorrow, of course, is double Pasha, of course, Chukas and Balak. It's the time we actually catch up to Eretz Yisrael, who were a week ahead of us for the last month, because the second day of Shavuot, which here was a Yom Tov, there was a regular Shabbat, and they lain Pashas Noso, while we were still laning the Yom Tov laning. So now we catch up. We're all equal going forward. So there's lots to read, lots to learn. And of course, as is normal when you have a double sedra, the haftarah then is read from the second. It's the haftarah of the second Pasha's Balak, which reminds us again not to forget what the design of Bilam and Balak was. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his great kindness, saved us and delivered us from his aspirations to curse the Jewish nation. And then the Shabbos runs on. It's still a very, very short Shabbos, although it is getting already a little bit longer. Of course, this week is chapter 5 of Pirkei Avos. So if you got some time, open a book, read a bit, read some of the incredible, incredible wisdom of our great sages that's found in Pirkei Avos. Prepare yourself. Prepare yourself for the week by strengthening yourself in our morals and our ideals, in our concepts of fairness, of justness, of devotion to Torah and kindness. And then Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, exactly 6 o'clock, already 4 minutes later than it was 2-3 weeks ago. We are moving sort of in the direction of it getting later. It's quite slow at the beginning, but before we know it, we'll be in summer mode. We are learning in our Hilchos Shabbos slot. We are going through some of the laws of agriculture. We've done already. We've done planting. We've done plowing. We've done harvesting. And today I want to do a little bit on the malacha of Ma'amer. Ma'amer actually refers to gathering the harvested grain into sheaves or into piles. Similarly, one who gathers sort of picked fruit and places them, right, in boxes or piles, also violates this Torah principle of Ma'amer, as does one who sort of gathers cut branches or sort of reeds to use as fuel. Those are all considered part of the malacha. This malacha, as a rule, relates to objects that grow in the ground and are still kind of located in the area where they grew. And that's because the harvest is generally gathered where it grows. However, the reality is that certain types of produce are gathered in two stages. For such products, both stages are prohibited by Torah law. Even if the second stage doesn't take place in the field. This is the case, for example, when producing a kind of a pressed fig cake. The first stage in the process actually involves sort of gathering figs from the fields, which is prohibited on Shabbos on account of this malacha of Ma'amer. The second stage involves pressing them together to produce a cake. During this, even if one does this at home, it's also prohibited by Torah law as a tolda, as a corollary of this mitzvah of Amir, since this is the standard way to form these cakes. And this is brought by the Shulchan Aruch in Siman 340, and the Mishnah Berurah mentions it there also. Okay, we're going to stop here, take a short break, and come back with our last few comments. This is Chai FM 101.9. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos Show. My name is Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We are talking about the Malacha of Ma'amer, gathering produce together, gathering fruit scattered in the yard is not prohibited by Torah law because they are not located where they grow. Yet, our Chazal, our sages, nevertheless prohibited gathering them because it resembles a weekday activity. However, one may collect a few pieces of fruit and then eat them. If the fruit fell in one place and did not sort of scatter very much, one may collect them and put them in a basket. If they fell into gravel or dirt, even if they are all in one place, one may not gather them and place them into a basket because doing so resembles boirer. You're separating the good stuff from the bad. However, one may pick them up one at a time and actually eat them, says the Shulchan Aruch in Siman 335. One may collect fruit that is scattered inside one's house because gathering items inside does not even resemble the malacha of Ma'amer. Although according to Torah law, Ma'amar applies only to things that grow in the ground, the sages forbade gathering sort of a salt from salt mines. Since the salt looks like it grows from the ground, collecting it resembles Ma'amar. Based on this, several of the Acharonim rule that one may not gather eggs that were laid even before Shabbat. However, right, the Rav Ozna and Shevet HaLevi, right, eggs that were laid on Shabbos anyway are muktzah, and therefore, of course, one may not pick them up at all. And finally, Ma'amar does not apply to items that have sort of undergone already major transformation. Thus, one may gather sort of cooked fruits together. Similarly, gathering sort of clothing made from natural fibers is also not a problem, since they have been transformed from their original form. And really, that's all the time we have, as Shabbos really fast is approaching. As we look at the clock, shoo, it is getting near, and just enough time for me to first of all thank every single one of you for joining us at this time. It's a challenging time of day of the week, and I really appreciate your presence, your attention. Hopefully we learned something and were inspired in some way today, and I just want to take the opportunity of wishing each and every one of our radio family a beautiful geschmack, warm, inspiring, and uplifting Shabbos for one and for all. To each and every one of our radio family, a Shabbat Shalom, a good Shabbos. Kol Kol Tov.